Welcome back to The Green on Delaware Public Media. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. We continue our Canada conversations with more from the GOP primary for governor, where we now turn to David Graham. Graham ran for governor in 2004, losing in the Republican primary, then ran as a write-in candidate in 2012. He most recently ran for state attorney general under the Independent Party of Delaware banner in 2014. A reminder, the interviews you'll hear here on The Green are edited for time. Full conversations are online at DelawarePublic.org. So let's start with what prompted you to run for governor here in 2020?
After 28 years of Democrat governors in this state since 1992, Delaware needs a house cleaning, and it starts on November 3rd when we elect a Republican to replace John Carney. Our state agencies are full of less than adequate appointed officials, and it's not being run in a business-like manner. Our budget has exploded in the last 28 years, and one credential I have is that I have the credential of being a CPA. I'm not in public practice, but a governor, with what the financial storm may be happening to Delaware, you need a finance guy, and I have the skill set and the leadership, the management credentials to be the governor of Delaware.
I want to jump into a couple of issues now, and we'll start with probably the biggest issue on the plate for the state and the country right now, that is the coronavirus pandemic. Since March, the governor's office has largely managed the state's response to the pandemic through executive order. How would you rate the job that Governor Carney has done? And are there one or two things that you would have done differently had you been governor?
Well, there's a number of inconsistencies with what has happened. One thing that perplexes me is, why didn't they say at the very beginning, everybody put on masks, and the governor should have set an example by appearing with a mask on his face? Maybe people would have taken it more seriously. And then you knew that, for example, these chicken processing plants down in Sussex have a population of workers. They live in close quarters. Sometimes there's eight or nine of them in housing. It follows reason that action should have been taken early on. And the second point was, and I've written a lot of political commentaries over the last 10 years and letters to the editor to express my views. The governor, and I wrote a letter, it was published in the Delaware State News within the last month. I said, the governor of Pennsylvania is a Democrat, and he opened his state on a county-by-county basis based on the stats. And if you look at the history of what has happened, Kent County should have gone to level 3 the first part of July. And instead of that, the governor has used a micromanagement, one size fits all. And he's hurt. He's damaged people financially, small businesses. Many of them are not going to be able to recover. And yet it seems like the bigger businesses like Walmart and so on, they're free to operate as if nothing happened. And if I'm elected governor, one thing I want to do is number two is find out what went on during the Carney administration. And number one, let's come up with a better plan for next time that happens, because we've all seen the movie. We know that this was going to happen one day. And my observation as someone that's been working in the Carvel State Office Building for the last 15 years on the eighth floor, they had no plan in place. They spend all their time on this far left political agenda. And the important things, the business of running this state, has been neglected.
Assuming there's no vaccine readily available or no significant advances in treatment, what would you do day one if you're elected to manage the situation in January, assuming, again, we're still kind of trying to get this under control?
Well, one advantage I would have as the Republican governor is I've been a supporter of Donald Trump since September of 2015. I was one of the first politicians to publicly support him because we needed a businessman. And I would reach out to the President of the United States and his staff to find out the best information available. What is happening in the other states? what are other states doing that we have not done in the state of Delaware? Because as a person with a business management degree from Goldie Beacon College and 30 years of private industry experience before I went into state government to run for governor and find out what was wrong, we don't have to do original thought on a lot of these things. A lot of these things have already been resolved, and I would tap into the national, into the Trump administration and say, hey, I'm the Republican governor of Delaware. I need help here. What do I need to do? What can be done to bring us our economy back to normal status so that people can get on with their lives?
Well, you mentioned the economy, and even when the pandemic subsides, we're likely to be facing, both in Delaware and nationwide, a continued recession. Some industries like retail and restaurants are not likely to fully recover. As governor, what would your priorities be for getting the economy back on track and creating jobs for those who may not have jobs to go back to, looking more kind of long-term rather than short-term?
One thing that we have to do long-term for the benefit of the state of Delaware, and this is my banner issue, over 45 states and every federal agency has an inspector general. Delaware does not. We need to have an inspector general in this state to root out the corruption, fraud, and abuse that's occurring in state government with these sweetheart contracts that are going on. I was a three-stripe sergeant back in West Germany when I was 20 years old, and we had inspector generals that came in every year. And if you know you're going to be inspected, then you know you're going to do everything right, because someone can come in and find errors in the way you're managing things. The Delaware Attorney General's office protects the agencies. It does not protect the citizens of Delaware. And we need a public watchdog, and that's the Attorney General. And the reason I say this is critical for the long-term benefit of employment and the economy in Delaware, the Sarbanes-Oxley Act set a high standard of conduct for business executives. Why would any business executive want to bring their company into the state of Delaware knowing that it's rated among the most corrupt states in the United States of America? We have to clean up the reputation of Delaware, and the only way we're going to do it is elect a Republican governor that's committed to start running the state in a business-like manner and put in place an inspector general. And if on November 3rd, if I'm elected Republican governor of Delaware and I take the oath of office on January 20th, maybe the sign at the border says, Dave Graham, Delaware, under new management, because the Democrats have run this state into the ground.
I want to talk a little bit about what we've seen in Delaware and other states throughout the spring and summer, that is protests surrounding racial equity. The General Assembly did pass the first leg of a constitutional amendment explicitly adding protections against discrimination based on race, color, and national origin to the state constitution. They also passed a ban on police use of chokeholds this past session. There's a number of other bills that are expected to be introduced in January when the General Assembly reconvenes. If you're elected governor, what would you prioritize in terms of dealing with issues of racial equity that have been raised over the past few months?
Well, I believe that the governor has to reach out to the community and talk directly with the community and find out what it is in state government that is causing the friction with race relations. And I always say, when people ask me, well, what do you think about what's happening now with the protest and the rioting and the looting and the commission of felonies in the process, I say, you know, next summer there's going to be a movie out that might explain a lot. We're going through the most unusual year politically and economically that this country has probably ever gone through, with the exception probably the Civil War. And we're having a revolution through the ballot box. It started in 2016 with the election of Donald Trump, who was an outsider. And it's continued. There was a counterattack in 2018 where the Democrats took over the Congress. And then we're going to have another leg of the revolution through the ballot box in 2020. And as the candidate for governor, I will be a part of that revolution. Delaware is actually a geographically large city with about 11 or 12 neighborhoods where everybody knows each other. We're connected somehow. And Delaware, because of that, is always out of sync with the rest of the nation. And this year, with qualified candidates at the top of the ballot, the Delaware voters will come out and vote the Republicans back into power in this state. You have to have a fresh start with all these things. Governor Carney has been under blistering attack from the black community for his handling of racial relationships. And I would open the door and welcome them to come in. And I don't believe in committees or commissions. Committees are what you form when you have no intention of solving the problem. You just put it into a committee. You can't run anything by committee. You can't run a business by committee, and you can't run the state of Delaware by committee. So as governor, I would take a personal interest in talking to the people in the community about their concerns and find out what needs to be done as far as laws or as far as policy or as part. Probably the problem is, and that's why I'm running for governor, we have a leadership problem in this state. We've got a state agency full of these appointed officials who are less than adequate, who are trying to supervise merit employees that are more qualified and know more about the job than they do. So, and again, it comes down to Delaware needs a house cleaning on November 3rd. And it starts with the governor's office.
Well, one of the things that people in the community who have been protesting have been talking about and asking for is a look at the law enforcement officers' Bill of Rights and use of force policies. That seems to be one of the consistent themes we've heard. Would you back efforts to revisit those and look for possible changes to them?
Well, I would talk. You have to talk to the people that are doing the job. And I'm perplexed by this whole issue, how it erupted, because when it happened with the death of that one person in custody, where that police officer stood there with his foot on the neck of the person while others stood around and watched as if it were a videotape scene, I've talked to police officers. They say if that was done by a fellow officer, I would not have stood there and not done anything. Or you talk to anyone, even if they weren't a police officer, they said no one would tolerate that. And I've had retired police officers say, I've had to pull fellow officers off when they were too aggressive. So you have to start with the people that are doing the job, and that is the state police, the chiefs of police of all the towns. And then also, again, there seems to be a law and unofficial law in Delaware, we're not allowed to look outside the boundaries of our state for solutions to our problems. So we need to find out what other municipalities or what other cities or towns have successfully dealt with this issue. We don't need to have original thought with everything they do. And I guess I'm more sensitive than any of the other five candidates for governor that are on the ballot, in as much as when I was 18, I was trained as a National Guard in riot control. When I was over in Germany in the 1st Armored Division, I was team chief of the unit police force. I've carried a weapon, a pistol or a rifle, and been in a law enforcement position. In my first year out of the Army in 1976, I was only 21, and went to school, the day school at Goldie Beacon College, on the GI Bill. I worked as an armed dog handler my first year. So I, more than any of the other candidates for governor, have an understanding of what it's like to wear a badge and carry a weapon in defense. And I fully support our law enforcement, but we need to make sure we have done everything possible to protect our citizens from the small minority of officers that may not
be acting according to the standards of the force they're on.
I want to talk a little bit about education, specifically education funding. It's certainly an issue the next governor is going to have to tackle. Chancery Court has already ruled property tax system used in all three counties is unconstitutional. That could trigger property reassessments. The second half of the lawsuit is still pending. It is looking more specifically at funding inequities in the state's education funding system. What do you feel needs to be done with the way Delaware funds its schools?
Funding of education is one of the bigger items in the Delaware state budget. And we're not structured the way other states are. A lot of our tax revenues flow to the state level and then flow out to the school districts. And I certainly don't want Delaware to become like the surrounding liberal states of New Jersey and New York and Connecticut, because their business model for government is high taxes, high property taxes. But bringing up the topic of education, I believe the core issue of our problem with funding our education is that we have, because of the federal programs which dictate what needs to be done for federal monies, we've got micromanagement occurring. And what I wanted to look at, one of my top priorities, is when you talk to any teacher, and I've had a number of friends that have had teaching careers, and they tell me, I can't wait to get out because my time is taken up by bureaucratic demands when I should be focusing on teaching the children that are in my charge. And I would want, as governor, to talk on a sample basis with teachers in each one of these districts and ask them the simple question, what are they making you do as a teacher that has nothing to do with educating our students? I went to Smyrna High School and graduated there in 1972. You didn't have all this administration in these school districts. In Smyrna School District, you had a superintendent, you had an assistant superintendent who was in charge of the buses, and you had a secretary. And it seems like we've created a bureaucratic hierarchy where the teachers are not focused as much on the students as they are on keeping the bureaucrats happy. It's a bunch of make work. So I think to get a handle on what we're doing in this state, it has to start at the teacher level and supporting the teachers that are doing the job of educating our students.
I want to quickly hit a couple of other issues that were expected to see some debate during the past legislative session, but did not because the pandemic limited what was done by the General Assembly. I want to get a quick sense of where you stand on some of these issues. First, reinstating the death penalty in Delaware.
I don't think it will be reinstated in Delaware because the Delaware Supreme Court, when they ruled 4-5 that it was unconstitutional to have the death penalty. The one lone holdout was James Vaughn on the Supreme Court that ruled against it. I do not believe it's going to be reversed, except if you look at the history of Delaware. And I'm a native son of Delaware, unlike any of the other candidates running for governor, who sincerely cares about Delaware and has followed the history for a number of years. They did away with the death penalty back, I believe it was in the early 1960s, and then they had a crime that was so horrible that they reinstituted the death penalty. But for example, bring us to the Governor Carney administration. You had that awful incident the first month that John Carney was governor, and a correction officer lost his life. And from what I understand, instead of the governor allowing the professionals who knew how to handle the situation, he personally intervened and tried to resolve it himself as governor, which is an example of a governor that doesn't understand the basic principle of you hire good people, you give them the responsibility and the authority to do their job and let it go. But as to the death penalty, if you have people that commit a crime and the highest level of punishment is life sentence, and they're in prison, what's the motivation
for them to act any better than they are. It seems like we have the wrong priorities. The same people that are against the death penalty are for abortion. How in the world can you do that? How can you be that? I don't understand it. How can you be against the death penalty but for abortion? Makes no sense. And I'm no Bible thumper, you know. I'm a Baptist. But I asked the pastor about the death penalty, and he explained that it is the reason it's called for in the Old Testament. The penalty for death shall be murder, because you have free will, and if someone commits a crime, God cannot stop it because of free will. So you've grossly interrupted God's plan for that human life, much like when you perform abortion, you've interrupted God's plan for that life. And God has stipulated that the penalty for death shall be murder. So as governor, I believe that we should have the death penalty in Delaware as a deterrent to more horrendous forms occurring in these prisons.
How about legalizing recreational marijuana?
With all the big problems that we have in the state of Delaware, I'm not wasting any time on the legalization of marijuana. And before we do anything, we better take a look at these other states and what their history is with the legalization of marijuana. Because, for example, in Colorado, it's about raising tax revenue. It's not about the legalization of marijuana. But that being said, I don't think we should be using a whole lot of law enforcement resources to persecute people that use marijuana on a recreational basis. We have a huge heroin epidemic crisis in this state, and that's what we should be talking about.
How about gun bills? They ranged in this General Assembly session from ghost guns and limiting or banning high-capacity magazines to banning assault weapons and perhaps a gun permitting system. Are there any gun bills that you would consider supporting?
At this point, no, because I think it's all political posturing during an election year. Because if you look at the campaign finance reports for people running for office this year, if they take these far-left positions on taking violating the Second Amendment rights by taking the guns away from people, the money flows from out of state into their campaign coffers. It's a lot of political posturing. Let's after I'm elected governor and there's no election year, perhaps we can look at the whole issue in a more sane manner. But this year, no.
And finally, is there an issue you feel is not getting the attention it deserves in this election cycle, and how would you address it if you're elected?
Well, you talked about constitutional amendments in one of the earlier questions, and I was motivated to start the process of running for governor back in 2000 after I spent 9 years being dragged backwards to the family courts of two states by dishonest lawyers in and out of judicial robes. And I found out that Connecticut has a wonderful, open court, fast, efficient, caring, the opposite of the family court of Delaware. And when they paid all my expenses to be in the governor's race in 2004 to help Bill Lee, I just became a single-issue candidate, and I talked about the family court of Delaware, that it needed to be reformed. And as a result of that, Nancy Wagner, who was chairman of the Judicial Committee, put through a constitutional amendment that made the family court a constitutional court, and a constitutional court is required to be open. Now, it took three sessions to get it through because it was blocked by one person, but there's a constitutional amendment that the family court is a constitutional court and thereby is supposed to be open. And I find it ironic that we have a judiciary that does not support the Constitution of Delaware. And one of my highest priorities is I'd like to replace the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Delaware, because he does not support opening the family court and reforming it based on the Connecticut model. And I've been allies with the senior legislator, Bruce Ennis of Smyrna. He's a Democrat, but many of these issues in Delaware, they're not Republican issues. They're not Democrat issues. They're bipartisan issues. And one thing I would do as governor, I would have the bully pulpit, and that was my motivation for running for governor. Because if you're governor, you get to appoint these judges, and I'm going to ask them when they want to be a judge and they're before me, you know, these 20 years that I was running for governor and on the issue of family court and you knew about it, what did you do to be part of the problem? But the Delaware State Bar, there's a lot of great people that are lawyers. I've worked with the deputy attorney generals up in on the 8th floor of the Carvel building. But the reality is, and this it was expressed best by the chief judge of the Connecticut court, when I took Bruce Annis, a Democrat, and Michael Ramon, a Republican, and others from that Family Law Commission back in December 2017, and I have a picture that I took there to prove it happened. And the chief judge of the Family Court of Connecticut said, it's no secret that the Family Court of Delaware is a cottage industry that exists first and foremost for the financial benefit of the lawyers that practice there. And as governor, I'll have the bully pulpit on that issue. So reform of family court based on the Connecticut model is something that needs to be discussed. It's a reason, it's a bipartisan issue. All the legislators are tired of hearing all the horror stories that occurs there. And a lawyer should not, unless they have other real life experience, they don't have the leadership ability, they don't have the management ability, they don't have the analytical ability to run a court. It's a disaster. And obviously, no lawyer should be made governor of Delaware.
That's Republican candidate for governor David Graham. Our full conversation with him is available at DelawarePublic.org. And we'll hear more from GOP candidates for governor in our next edition of The Green, Thursday. And that's all we have time for on this special edition of The Green. The interviews you've heard are online right now at DelawarePublic.org. Just head to The Green's page on our website. And remember, you can also check out The Green via podcast at our website, on Apple Podcasts, and on the NPR One app. Support for The Green comes in part from the Delaware Alliance for Nonprofit Advancement. As the leader of the nonprofit sector, Dana is committed to strengthening, enhancing, and advancing Delaware nonprofits through low-cost training, consulting, research, and advocacy support for nonprofit leaders and board directors. Thanks to Canada Conversations Associate Producer Kelly Reed for helping make today's show possible. For her and the staff here at Delaware Public Media, I'm Tom Burns saying thanks for joining us. And we'll see you again on another special edition of The Green, Thursday at 3 p.m.